This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we have another exciting guest and someone that I actually have been trying to get together with for quite some time. This is Curtis Cam, who is over here on the mainland, all the way from Hawaii, actually visiting as a result of a convention that was held in Dallas recently called Pebblepalooza that Lance Pierce puts on. And it is kind of an invitation type of a thing that, well, it's an intimate convention, usually about 50 or so guys. People like this year, Steve Forte, Bill Malone, and I'd go on and on. There were just a lot of really great guys who were there. I was unable to make it because I've got so many conventions I'm going to be going to this year, and some I've already attended, and some I'll be posting in upcoming podcasts, of course, convention updates, as I normally do each day from the convention. But anyhow, Curtis was in Dallas, which is just a short four-hour drive or so from Houston, and he came down for a few days and was kind enough to give us a lecture for our group one day over Memorial Day weekend, and then the next day we had our annual magician's banquet that was just a barbecue and a chance for us to kind of get together, and we had about 100 people, 100 magicians with our families who were in attendance, and Curtis also then performed doing his stand-up parlor show. Very entertaining. The day before we had been privileged to see his close-up show, or part of his show, during the lecture that he had shared with us. But Curtis is really best known, of course, as being a coin man. Some of you don't know that he really is a GP, or a general practitioner, having performed on stage, and he is very adept at performing illusions and creating illusions, got a lot of ideas and things how he has developed them, as well as close-up and other kinds of close-up, and not just coins, but including cards and other kinds of close-up things in too. But he really has a passion for coins and is best known for that. And in fact, it's kind of hard to get him aside to chat with him because he's always sessioning and talking to people about coins because other people want to talk with him also. So getting a few moments of his time when we can actually talk about other kinds of things rather than actually sessioning and sharing moves or learning moves from him is kind of difficult. A couple of years ago at the IBM convention in Phoenix, Curtis was one of the featured performers. And during that time, we were trying to sit down and have some time at least to chat for a podcast. And I was in hopes at that time to have spent some time to have a longer, up to 1 hour period to chat with him. Well, during the time he was again here in Houston and after the banquet was over, or I should say after our barbecue was over, I tried to get a little bit of his time, and I felt like I was pulling him away from the other guys who were wanting to get more information from him. And he's just such a great giving guy that, and such a performer that he just really loves performing. He loves sharing, and it's hard to kind of pull him aside. And I felt pretty bad about trying to take the time away from some of the others because the time was so precious. But he was only going to be in Houston for a short amount of time, so I sincerely appreciate the time that he has given me to share with you guys here on the podcast. I hope that if you ever get an opportunity to sit down or to watch Curtis, you can go aside and he will be glad to share all kinds of ideas with you. Great guy. A lot of stuff that he talks about and shares with us here, not only having to do with his personal philosophy on performing and doing close-up, but also talking about stage illusions and some of his ideas on that, plus scripting, I think is quite interesting about how that he actually takes more time to develop his scripts than he does actually the time to practice the routines and the tricks and things that he does in practicing his sleights. But this is going to be just another great opportunity to hear from a real master, and it's a little bit shorter than our usual time, and it's kind of in two parts in a way. The first few minutes is after the barbecue was over, and we're still kind of in the room, and there's a little bit of ambient noise. Nothing is just too distracting, but after a few minutes, we step outside and stand on the patio, and so we get a much quieter atmosphere there where we talk a little bit more in detail and a little bit more in length then as well. So, enough for me. Let's hear what Curtis has to say here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and I have with me as my guest then today, Mr. Curtis Cam. Aloha.
Aloha. Scott, nice to see you.
You as well, sir. So this is the usual greeting of aloha, meaning goodbye and hello.
Yes,
as well.
Yes.
Okay. So now, mahalo means good luck or thanks. Or
thank
what
you.
Mahalo is
thank you.
What do you say back when someone says thank you? I mean, what's the you're welcome to in Hawaiian?
I don't know if there is one.
Okay, you just kind of nod.
You have to be an actual Hawaiian speaker at that point. And it's beyond my knowledge.
You. Okay,
right.
Over there. And really, you're kind of a coin guy, too, rather.
Yeah. So yeah. I know nothing else.
And so you just finished getting back from Pebble Palooza. And this, I don't know how many of these they've had in the past, but that is a really great convention. Is this your first one of those?
No. I've been to all of them, but this is number four.
Okay. And he doesn't have them on a regular... I say he, this is Lance Pierce, by the way, that sponsors the thing. So he doesn't have them on a regular basis, I don't think, like every... Like the past four consecutive years, has he?
It's been consecutive, his feeling at the end of every one of them is the same as mine when I organize conventions in Hawaii, and that's that this is the last one.
Yeah.
So he makes no promises about the next year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you talked about the yesterday, the lecture that you gave about the conventions that you had in the past. Mm-hmm. And after the first year, it was a good one, and the second year wasn't financially, so you decided, okay, we're done with that. So
We decided we had a venue, and they wanted a show. And we had members who could do a show, and they said, in exchange for the show for our members, we'll let you use the place during the day for a convention.
Yeah.
And Daryl Martinez wanted to come out and do something with us and do a lecture and that sort of thing.
Right.
And so we used him as the star performer, and we did a convention around him, and I lectured because I had things I could tell the performers. We had a couple other guys who actually could lecture to the group, and we had enough people to do the public shows, and we actually made money on a convention because we had a free venue and Daryl was coming anyway.
Right. Okay.
And so we said, this is easy, anybody can do this. So the next year we brought over everyone we could possibly think of, and that it was just a dream list because we figured we couldn't be beat. And it was Roger Klaus and his wife, and Larry Jennings and his wife, and then we thought, why not Tommy Wonder from the Netherlands?
Yeah, why not? We got a lot of money, so
right. Yeah, and we had a great time.
Yeah,
I got to perform with people I'd never ever performed for otherwise. I got to share a stage with Tommy Wonder, which was just marvelous.
Yeah,
I got to share a backstage with Tommy Wonder, which was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And
why was that funny? What was hilarious about that?
He's just a funny guy. He was a funny guy. He was very particular. He was doing the stage show for us with the floating birdcage.
Oh, wow, okay.
And the birdcage was something that he had made himself, and it was very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
And
didn't anybody touch it.
Yeah, nobody bumped it, nobody touched it, and we were all sharing a dressing room. The other acts were in there. There was a woman spraying hairspray in her hair, and he was just running in there trying to keep the air off of the cage.
Wow, okay.
And, but he's a funny guy. He was telling me a bunch of stories about performances he had done. Apparently, they had a performance he was going to do in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they were about an hour before the show, and the other performers, who were Spanish performers, said to him, well, let's go have dinner. And they went off. They left the venue. They went out to have dinner. And he thought, perhaps this will be fast, so he went with them. And it was like 20 minutes after the show time, and they were still eating.
Oh my!
And it went to a full 2 hours after show time, and he kept asking, you know, well, shall we go back? And they said, no, it's all right, it's all right. And finally, they told him, they said, look, there's no show without us. They will wait. And when they got there 2 hours after the set showtime, the audience was there, and they were perfectly happy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It doesn't happen like that anymore, at least not here. I don't know how things are in Spain.
Only in Spain, I guess. You know, I've heard that before, because many years ago I was going to be attending the FISM in Madrid, I believe it was, and I remember Terry Seabrook was saying, well, they don't run it quite like clockwork the way that maybe the Germans or they do in the Dutch or whatever, so things won't be running on time, and I've heard that was kind of the case that year, and I think it's just a cultural thing that there was
no big hurry, you know, for that over there. I was going to ask you also that you were talking a little bit about your philosophy a little bit yesterday, and I could tell there were more things you really wanted to talk about but didn't have a lot of time. You know, this is a place, really, a podcast like this, where you can't show a trick, but you can talk about, you know, your performing philosophy.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's good. There's nothing magicians like to talk more about.
That's true.
Than magic. And basically, I was talking about a comparison between reality television, professional wrestling, and magic.
Yeah.
And there are three areas in which the audience understands at some level what they're seeing is not genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they don't know exactly where the line is.
Yeah.
There's a rule in professional wrestling called kayfabe, and kayfabe is simply the belief that you never tell them that it's not real.
Yeah.
And there was a Radiolab show. It's a podcast on
NPR.
NPR, I think, carries it, but I'm not sure if it's on there right now. But they talked about the use of kayfabe and the time when professional wrestling was at a juncture, and the decision was either to admit that it's not real or double down on it.
Yeah.
And that's when Vince McMahon doubled down on the idea that it is a genuine event, and he became a character in the wrestling event. Now, if you look at professional wrestling now, the managers, the girlfriends, the associated families are all characters in the wrestling drama.
Right.
Yeah, and that's because at that moment Vince McMahon doubled down and became Mr. McMahon. And I think the same thing is...
started living that life.
Yeah, started playing that character in front of the cameras and in front of the audiences. It became one of the people you could boo or cheer for.
Yeah.
When faced with a challenge like that as a magician, we're faced with that challenge all the time. Mm-hmm. Audiences always ask, is this real? And it's probably a good idea in those situations to double down on the fantasy. Say, yes, it is, and this is real, and that is real, and this is how it works. Not because it will you want to convince anyone, but because they want to enjoy that experience. That's the way they participate in the experience. And it all ties in, the whole thing ties into the idea that it is fun to be fooled.
Right.
I know Michael Close penned an essay years ago called The Big Lie.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the promise that we saw in the instructions of magic tricks we bought, that where it says it's fun to be fooled, and he wrote a very compelling essay about how it's not fun to be fooled.
I remember this. Mm-hmm.
And the line is, if it was fun to be fooled, then Richard Nixon would still be president. And it turns out wrestling, reality television, the experience of other fantasy venues shows that people do enjoy being fooled. They're willing to play along. They're willing to let it unfold.
Yeah.
Because they're more interested in seeing how your fantasy is going to unfold than they are seeing returning to reality.
That's a good point. And I think it has to do with conviction also. Whenever they're a performer, particularly in coins or sleight of hand, where you're saying that a coin or something is in one hand, that you have to be convinced as well.
Yes.
And so you live that lie, you know,
yes.
Basically. Live a lie, I guess it's funny. But, yeah, you have to be convinced of it yourself. You have to have the conviction to make other people believe that as well, at least for that moment, you know, too.
Yeah, I think that helps. There are little touches, little nuances of body English and timing that you simply would not indulge in unless you believed it. It's almost impossible to come up with it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But if you simply, if you know you're pretending.
Right.
Yeah, but if you become something of a method actor and you just say, I believe I have the coin in my hand, then you'll pause the right amount. Your hand will dip just a little bit given the weight of the coin. You will treat it a certain way.
Right.
Yeah.
And that helps convince the audience then that he's telling us the truth about this.
Yes,
truth.
Yes.
Yeah. You're living that as being the truth.
Right. I've seen a lot of beginning performers perform a false transfer of a coin, and then the hand that supposedly has the coin, they ignore it.
Yeah.
And if that really was the coin and this was a trick about that coin, it would have all your attention.
Right.
Right. So that's the kind of thing. It's just you have to make sure that every moment is consistent with the illusion you're trying to create, and that's one way to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, they're about to kick us out of this, and we'll wrap this up, I think, somewhere a little bit later where maybe it's a little quieter than two.
All right, okay. We can do that.
All right, thank you. All right, yeah, a lot quieter out here. We're just going to stand outside for a few moments then as well. There were some other things that I was going to ask you about, of course, not just philosophy, but also that you had a show then in Hawaii for 13 years or so. How long was that?
Just about a little over 13, maybe 14, at the Halikoa Hotel in Waikiki.
And what was that like? How did you?
That was a full dinner show. It was, at its height, it was four doves, a girl assistant, three major illusions.
Oh, wow.
And a
so
juggler.
It wasn't just a close-up show kind of a thing?
Oh, no.
Was
no.
it all you?
It was me and the juggler and a girl who got cut up and twisted and that sort of thing. Nothing earth-shattering as far as the illusions were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
It was larger stuff, but I'm essentially a close-up performer even when I'm on stage.
But you're a general practitioner.
One of those people, yeah. I've also designed illusions for the other shows in Waikiki.
Have you?
And created effects for stage use and my own use eventually. I had a shadow box routine that was mm-hmm. a little bit unique, and we added, we think, a bunch of different gags to the metamorphosis that you don't see. And like most magicians, I have opinions about everything on the stage illusions and everything else.
Yeah, and what are your opinions? Because this show is all about you.
I will say one thing. The Lady from the Light, the shadow box, it's about the shadows. It is what makes that
you
different.
You seem to run through that too quickly. I agree.
Yeah. I think it's a mistake to think of the Lady from the Light or the shadow box as just a way to make a girl appear.
Okay.
There are many ways to do that.
Sure.
The only way that the shadow box is any different is the fact that there are the shadows coming from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that being the case, I like a shadow box that's large. You want a large front panel so that the audience can see the shadows that you're making
mm-hmm.
and that you have a canvas to work with. I've seen some people think that the trick is producing a girl. Mm-hmm. And if the trick is just producing a person, then you want a box that's as small as possible, because that's the deception.
If you're going to have the large box, you're going to have two or three or four or six people or whatever
come
out of it, sure.
Right, right. And I worked on John Hirakawa's show at when it was at the Hilton Hawaiian Village,
mm-hmm.
and we had a large shadow box based on that idea. It was about the size of a phone booth.
Wow.
And but it was really so you could see, so that he could cast and animate a shadow of a girl like a hula dancer,
mm-hmm.
and she would dance, and then she would appear there. And the show is the shadows. Also, if you're going to do that, and mm-hmm. you want to make a mystery of the shadows, I always found it nice to open the shadow box just before the production. So you've fully produced the shadow, and they know what's coming. And now they're going to wonder, how is he making that shadow? Is there going to be a person there? That's a good time to open the box and show them that it's empty.
Then
shut it, and then produce the girl.
Okay. So in the shadows, are you producing something different rather than a person? In other words, is it a bird or something else that's appearing, or a hand shadow or something? Or is it always a person that you first would have?
Well, for me, it was I would create the you would show the box empty, turn the light on,
okay.
and then show that when I place my hand in front of the shadow box, you see the shadow of my hand on the screen,
right.
which does not make sense when you think about it,
sure.
because the light's coming from the inside of the box.
Yeah.
But then that's traditional, right?
Right.
Ever since Doug Henning, I think that's what we've seen,
yeah.
is that you hold your hands in front of the box and your shadow appears and they think it's the shadows of your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you get a nice surprise when you move your hand away and the shadow is still there.
Yeah.
At that point, I would animate the shadows, and then the hand shadow would vanish, and it would be like a tease or a courtship.
Mm-hmm.
I would gesture at the box, and you would see the hand come up out of the shadow of the hand come up from the corner of the frame.
Okay.
And we would reach for each other and almost touch, and then the hand pulls away. And finally, I would have you would see the hand appear with the hand would appear with the shadow of a rose.
Okay.
And then she would drop the shadow of the rose, and I would catch the shadow, and it would be a black rose that I would capture.
Oh, okay.
And then I would turn it into
outside of the box.
Outside of the box.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I would turn it into a real rose,
mm-hmm.
and then use that to tease the hand to come back, and then reach through the paper and grab her hand and pull her out.
Okay.
So it had a little bit of a
different.
Plot. Yeah, it had a little bit of a plot, and in the middle of all of that, I would open the box to show that there's nothing in there
mm-hmm.
As I was looking for the source of the shadow.
Right. That's a different variation, certainly. Now, you said that you ran the show then for a long time. That was different from the one that John Hirakawa had done, you say?
Yes, actually, it was...
You guys trade off?
It was John Hirakawa's first show.
Okay.
And when he took the Hilton show, I took over at the Halekoa.
Okay. So there were two magic shows running on the same island?
Yes, yes. Okay. There were three shows eventually.
What was the third magic show then, Waikiki?
It was part of a
Polynesian
show. It involves performers that you're not going to be familiar with, mm-hmm. but eventually it involved Les and Terry Au, who were award winners at IBM SAM conventions and worked Las Vegas for a while,
mm-hmm.
and friends of mine. And Les is my dentist, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. So you said someone went to Las Vegas then also. It was your dentist.
That was Les Au.
Les, okay.
Les and Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And they're contest award winners, IBM and SAM.
Mm-hmm.
They did a fabulous bird act ending with...
Oh, there are two of them? Two magicians? You say they.
Oh, Terry's his wife.
Okay,
Les and Terry.
Okay.
Au.
Les, I thought it was his name,
yeah.
Les and Terry.
Yeah.
Les
yeah,
and Terry. Okay.
Yeah.
And like dysentery. Les
no.
and Terry. Okay.
Yeah, no, it wasn't anything like that.
Okay.
But... they did a bird act together, and very up-tempo, birds and rock and roll music, and,
yeah.
and eventually a macaw and a cockatoo,
right.
and they would sail out over the audience and fly around and come back.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I think they were doing the macaw split, too.
Mm-hmm.
The macaw would come in, he'd split
oh,
it
sure.
into two, all of that.
Uh-huh.
And it was a really flashy act, and... it worked well for the kind of audiences we were getting at the time in Waikiki, which were about 50%, 60% Japanese. And,
oh, and they like birds or something?
Well,
or
they
what?
Don't speak English, so you have
oh,
to be...
Oh, you got to do a visual
yeah,
thing. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Right. And
they say at the time, has the tourism changed as far as more English-speaking people coming now than before, or what?
Yeah, we're seeing more groups of tourists from China. We're seeing about a...
But they don't speak English either, I guess, though, do they?
Not for the most part.
Okay.
Actually, the Japanese were better.
Okay.
And the Korean groups are coming in now.
Okay.
And, of course, there's always been people from the mainland United States
mm-hmm.
and English-speaking places. They're known as westbound travelers
yeah.
In the business. And they come in on their own. They tend to book their own tours. But the groups like the Chinese, the Koreans, the Japanese all tend to book group tours.
Mm-hmm.
So they're easier to plan for, and it's easier to run a business that way. So,
right.
So the bigger shows tend to get the international audiences.
So as far as the percentage, you said it used to be about 50-50. So is it now more people who don't speak English than there are those who do?
I think so. I think, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that. So you do have to... So when you do you perform publicly then now? I mean, at Annabelle and Lee's or sometime? Or...
I don't perform at Warren and Annabelle's,
Warren and Annabelle's
on Maui.
Yeah.
Warren Gibson is a friend, and I see him every time I'm on Maui, but I don't perform there.
Mm-hmm.
I do private engagements, I'll tell you, I it's unfortunate, but I do more performing for magicians than I do for lay people.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, you got a full-time profession as a divorce attorney. I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That does keep me busy.
Yeah.
But it does pay for travel.
Yeah.
Because there's a fair amount of travel involved being a professional magician.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't not enjoy performing for magicians. But I've always felt that for me... performing for real audiences, lay audiences, is where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
And
more genuine reactions.
Yeah,
where you want them, not like, "Ooh, that was a good move."
Right, and that's what I want. I want I still want to be able to know that I can evoke a reaction out of the audience that I want.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to know that after all these years of doing this, that if I want them to laugh, they'll laugh. I want them to think, they'll think, and I want them to feel something. I can make them feel that way.
Do you script your performances as much as you do your your routine, in other words, the coin routine. I can see why you spend so many hours, you know, developing that. Do you spend, if not an equal amount of time, but at least some time actually scripting what you are saying?
I think that's most of my time, really.
Really?
The script is most of it.
That's a very important thing. People should really pay attention to this.
It's, frankly, I've been at this for 45 mm-hmm. or more years, and the moves are sort of secondary. At this point, sure. I proceed from the assumption that I can do anything that I want to do, and the valid question is, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And how is it going to make the audience feel? And what will people want to see?
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly scripting for. I think of the magic as like a blank slate.
Okay.
And almost any trick that you can think of can be done so that it's touching, so that it's funny, so that it's surprising.
Do you try to use all those emotions within one routine, or do you try to script something for a whole act? Or
it depends on what you're working on.
Okay.
You know, if you're working for material for table hopping,
mm-hmm.
first of all, you have a limited range of emotions you're supposed to be eliciting.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody wants the performer to come up to your table at a restaurant and make everybody cry.
Good point.
Right? I've been talking to magicians about that on this tour, about context.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all want to be the ones I talk to all want to be artists, and we all want to be able to think that we can make people feel better about themselves by mm-hmm. watching our acts.
Mm-hmm.
And we do.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's only so much you can do given certain contexts.
Yeah.
Restaurant work is fine and noble work. It's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably not the highest and best use of magic. Performing unbidden at someone's table in a restaurant is probably not the highest and best use of any art form.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Even if you were a brilliant genius concert violinist, if you came up to people's tables at a restaurant, they wouldn't recognize that. You know, they would barely pay attention.
Yeah, just another person in the background performing as
right.
an entertainer. Yeah,
right.
street performer.
Right.
Yeah.
The street performer example is the same. Joshua Bell was out in the streets and playing his violin masterfully.
Yeah, I know who he
is. Nobody cares.
Because of the venue where he is. But we can't find those kinds of great venues for people, places to perform, because we're still, I say we, magicians in general and mentalists and our ilk, are not considered as artists by the media. So in other words, they're not going to be promoting it the way they would in the New York Times in the arts section or something about, hey, there's going to be this wonderful magic show, unless it happens to be something that's playing on Broadway, you know, in Blackstone or Copperfield or Henning or somebody was there. So it's difficult to find the right kind of venue where people are going to come in with some sort of expectations.
I think it's difficult. I don't think it's impossible.
Well,
and I think
impossible.
I don't think that's true anymore.
Because of?
Steve Cohen. Helder Gumeras,
yeah.
Derek Delgadio,
yeah.
Certainly even Tom Mulica and
yeah.
the Mulica Bar.
Yeah.
Those are all destination attractions.
Mm-hmm.
Warren and Annabelle's in
right.
Maui.
Right.
Warren Gibson has built this wonderful destination theater,
mm-hmm.
and people come and they sell out two shows a night.
Yeah,
7 days a week.
I heard he's like number one on Yelp or something. I mean, it's the
yes.
highest like travel advisor, trip advisor or something.
He's very
yeah.
good at
promoting himself,
keeping
too.
that where it is.
Yeah,
and he makes that a number one rule with all of the entertainers that work at Warren and Annabelle's.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably a good thing to keep in mind that these places live or die on social media these days.
Yeah, and so you can create your own place. You just have to have conviction in yourself and your ability, and then be able to promote that properly.
Yeah, and you know, that's always been true.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's different is that now there are successful examples. If you wanted to mm-hmm. do it yourself,
mm-hmm.
You could show any potential investor, any potential venue, that you know, Helder and Derek do it in Los
right.
Angeles.
Right.
There are no less than three or four shows going on in San Francisco
mm-hmm.
at the moment. And there are other venues and other places, and you don't hear too much about them. But I'm really happy to believe that we're in the era of the one-man show.
Yeah, I know John Carney and some of these guys are doing
sure.
one-man shows, right? Paul Gertner and
mm-hmm.
others, yeah.
And because I really enjoy parlor entertainment, I really enjoy formal close-up because it's a chance to have a chunk of time with the audience.
Yes.
And you don't have to worry about the food coming or anything like that. And they did come to see you, and they do have and once you have that, there's an obligation to deliver more than just the magic.
Mm-hmm.
The magic is certainly what they came to see, but they also came with the expectation that this experience will be worth their time.
That's exactly right.
And if you paid more than you would pay for television for an hour, you have the right to expect more than if you just watch a television show for more than an hour.
Well, that's what I've said about going up to someone, whether you're in a cocktail setting or a restaurant or whatever, and you're actually intruding in their whatever they're doing right then. And whatever you have to show them is apparently more important than whatever they're talking about. So you have to have a pretty big ego to go and do that. As opposed to, you just said then, Curtis, where the people are coming actually to see you because they're buying a ticket. And so they have invested in coming to see you. And so they're going to sit there, which is the problem sometimes of offering free shows, whether it's going to be like in a restaurant or whether you're working a shopping center or, you know, or whatever, strip mall, and some people are just going by. They're not invested with their time, money, and effort to watch you necessarily. So you have to find something, I think, on your own, if you have enough conviction that I think I can make people watch and pay tickets. So on venues, as far as where that you first got started then 13 years ago, or whether it wasn't 13 years ago, but for that show that you had, did you approach them or did they approach you, and how did you find the hotel as far as trying to have particularly a major stage show? That wasn't like a, you know, I'm going to be going in and doing something kind of like what Steve Cohen's doing for a smaller group. You're looking to have a pretty good chunk of their space.
Right. And that show was a little bit unique. That one was one that I took over from John Hirakawa.
Oh, so he had already paved the way, and so you just kind of, okay, I got you.
And he wasn't able to do both.
Sure.
So
okay.
That was pretty simple. He had already broken the ground. And to his credit, he was the one who said as I think he started as a high school graduate. Maybe it was after he got out of college. Mm-hmm. He said, look, I'm a magician. I want to do a full evening show here in Waikiki. They had never done that before with magic.
Yeah.
The one thing that most people don't want to do if they own a venue is what they've never done before.
Yeah.
So at least if you can now, like I'm saying, now we can say, look, other people have done this before.
Yeah.
Speaking of all that, the parlor shows, Carl Andrews.
Yeah.
He did that very early on. Mm-hmm. He would have a room in a hotel wherever he was, and he would set up a formal parlor show. He did a fabulous job. And when we were doing our conventions, he came and did his show for our audiences.
Okay.
It was really it was enjoyable, number one. And number two was an education.
Yeah.
About his third or fourth trick that he did was the crazy man's handcuffs with the rubber bands. And people were just amazed.
In a parlor show?
Yes. And they were amazed that he would do something that they all knew, and some of them had even decided they weren't going to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But he explained why he does it, and how a pace of a show is different from doing just kind of a one-off type social stuff,
right?
And that sort of thing. So, he was really, really one of the pioneers of this kind of thing around here, around the island.
He was just through Houston and came by. We just did a podcast this last week.
In fact,
he stayed at my house and we chatted for quite some time about a lot of different things. And I know that when he was over there, he was successful. He gave a great lecture here. And one of the things he was talking about was working at the hotels and working the restaurants and everything. But he didn't talk too much about the parlor show, so I didn't know he did that. That was interesting.
Yeah. He will talk about it if you ask him.
Okay.
And
I would have known, I would have.
And he doesn't think it's all that impossible. He thinks it's pretty simple. He doesn't understand why more people don't do it.
Yeah.
But he was really good at it, and I don't think he factors that in.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Not everybody could do it. Yeah, I think if they do it one time, it's kind of, it's not going to work out. All right, well, tell you what, as we start to wrap up, I appreciate your time a lot, and there are a lot of other things that we're going to go do. But the name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question then, Curtis, to you is, what is your magic word? What is important to you? What is it that is your philosophy of life that you live by? It doesn't have to be a word. It could be a phrase. Whether it's magic or not, what's important?
Well, let me leave. Can I leave you with two things?
Yep.
Okay. One thing came up in the lecture, and people came up to me afterwards, after these lectures, and told me that it was something that they were happy to hear. Mm-hmm. And that's that I told them that for the last 20 or so years, I've been lecturing wrong. I lectured on the assumption that everyone that was listening wanted to be a professional magician.
Yeah.
And I was delivering material that works in a professional setting and that they could make a living with, and they could go, and I was encouraging them to go out and do it.
Not everybody wants to do that.
Not everyone wants to do that. You know what? there's a lot to be said for performing socially. Mm-hmm. And what I mean for that is not the benefits to the performer, but the benefits to the art itself.
Yeah.
And I've come to the belief that the social performer has different goals, different needs. Mm-hmm. They don't care about reset. They don't care so much about angles because you're performing for two or three people at a time.
Right.
You can control that.
Sure.
But they do care about examinability because no one will grab things out of your hands and want to examine things in your pockets more than your friends and family.
Right.
They have time to set up. Mm-hmm. They have time to... They can't do a long narrative because it's kind of rude in a social setting to take over all that time.
Yeah.
But as Tony Chang says, a fabulous magician in New York, the amateur is the one who has the freedom to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do just one perfect thing. And it's liberating.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to include things that people who perform socially would want to do.
Okay.
And it's one beat.
A different direction that you're taking.
Yeah. One beat, maybe not so technically demanding, but the scripting is not all that important.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working professionally, I think the scripting is pretty much everything.
If you're working for your friends or your family, yeah, different.
The other thing is, and this is, I guess, a decent way to close, there's the Robert Houdin expression, an actor is a magician playing the part of a magician.
Mm-hmm.
And people have been debating about it for a long time. In the lecture, I offer an alternative to that, a couple of alternatives. And I'll give you mine, and this is what I'm working with in my act these days. A magician is someone skilled at seeing the extraordinary in the ordinary. And that frees us up to be able to tell stories and jokes about moments of transcendence when extraordinary things happen out of ordinary life,
mm-hmm.
and also to do magic.
Yeah.
With ordinary objects. So
make
all
it
that
seem extraordinary.
Yes. And all that encourages people to appreciate the magic in their everyday lives. And that's not a bad way not a bad thing to leave them with.
That is a very good way to leave this also. Thank you, Curtis, very much. Appreciate your time.
Okay.
It's been wonderful. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Curtis Kam. This is Scotty Yap.
Thank you.
Well, again, I do want to sincerely thank Curtis Kam for being my guest on the podcast here today and for taking the time away from some of the other guys also. I want to thank them for giving me their time that they could have spent with them as well. So I hope that you enjoyed the opportunity that he has shared then with you with all these wonderful ideas. And if you get an opportunity to see Curtis or to chat with him, please do, because now you know him a little bit better. I want to thank all of you also for supporting The Magic Word by listening to The Magic Word. And if you have an opportunity, you could really help us a lot by going to the iTunes store. If any of you use iTunes to listen to this, then if you could go over there and give us just a 5-star rating and along with some sort of comment as to what you like about the podcast, that will really help our ratings and help expand to new areas where we would like to go and help spread the word. Yeah, it'd be great if you guys can do that. Doesn't cost you, but just a little bit of your time. If you do have the financial wherewithal that you can help support us, we certainly would appreciate that as well, so we can help offset some of our monthly costs for the domain and as well as some of the other hardware that we use and software that we have to buy and other kinds of things that we pay for monthly services and things like that. If you go to the magicwordpodcast.com, you'll see a place where you can become a friend of the Magic Word, and it will give you more information about how that you can support us with your financial pledge, whether it's going to be a one-time donation. You can do that through PayPal, or you can do that through patreon.com. That's P as in Peter, patreon.com. And there you can find some information about how that you can support us with your ongoing pledge. Whether it's for a few dollars or more a month, that would be wonderful and will certainly help, again, defray our expenses and help out a lot. Plus, there are a few things that you get as being a friend of the Magic Word, including a certificate and being on a special list that we give you some information about what's coming up before everybody else finds out about it, some special videos that we provide, and a few freebies we do from time to time also. So be sure to check that out, and please join us. Become a friend of the Magic Word. Some of you have been listening and enjoying the various product reviews that I have been doing over the past month or so from Murphy's Magic Supplies. Let me point out here that this is something that I am doing just as an additional service for you, the listeners. I have nothing invested in this, whether that I give a positive or a negative review. Let me point out and be specific that Murphy's Magic Supplies is not a sponsor of this podcast. I'm receiving no form of financial remuneration for reviewing any of their products nor talking anything about them or any of the other dealers. This is, again, something that I am doing just because I think it's important that we have a voice of my voice, I guess, out there, or kind of just, if not a voice of reason, at least someone who is an independent voice who is speaking from my heart as to what I think about this. Now, whether you agree or not, that's up to you, but I just want you to know that I have no dog in this fight, if you will. I have no financial benefit that I get except for whatever that you might buy from my store. I do have those products available, good, bad, or indifferent. However that I review them, I post them over there because it could be that even though that I may not think they're that great, it might be something that you like and you can order that then as well. So I do have those available. So again, I'm not trying to sell these things just to make money this way, nor am I receiving, as I said, any kind of financial sponsorship from Murphy's on this. So just to be clear, for those of you who might be thinking, well, I'm not interested necessarily in supporting Scott as being a friend of the Magic Cord because he's being paid well enough from Murphy's. No, that's not the case. I don't get a dime from them. So just so you know, and so the record is straight. If you also, we're on Facebook or any of the social media. You can certainly follow us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/TheMagicWordPodcast and liking our page there. If you're on Twitter, we're at MagicWordPod. That's the hashtag MagicWordPod. And if you are on Instagram, you can follow me at ScottWellsMagic. If you guys buy tricks from time to time, let me suggest that you visit our store at themagicwordpodcast.com and go over to the Magic Store, and you can see some things that we have available for sale there. And these are some items that come from Murphy's Magic Supplies, and anything that you purchase will help support the Magic Word as well. I'm always interested in hearing your comments to hear how we perhaps can improve the Magic Word. And also, if you've got some suggestions for guests that you would like to hear, I would be glad to try to contact these people and try to make your wish come true. And so I know that we have listeners from all over the world, so just drop me an email and I will see where I can, if I can find these people. And a lot of times it's available on Skype, like we did here a while back with Simon Lovell. We just contacted him on Skype and did it in which that I was on Skype and he was on someone's cell phone. So I believe that we can reach about anybody somewhere in the world. So wherever you are, or wherever they are, just let me know and we'll try to connect. And I would appreciate you sending me those comments and your suggestions to my email address, which is scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. I also know that a lot of you will listen to these podcasts but don't necessarily go to the website, and you're missing a lot of additional content. I probably spend almost as much time putting together the blog and the photos and all the links and everything on the blog as I do actually producing the audio portion of this podcast. And so it's a lot of time and trouble, and I hope that some of you or many of you are actually going to the website and looking at some of that content. If you're not, please do. Please go and visit themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you can find out a lot more information about what's going on with these people and who they look like, because I've had, again, listeners who have contacted me saying, I wish you'd post pictures of some of these people so we could have an idea of what they look like. They have an idea in their mind what they look like, but they may not actually know for sure until actually post a picture. So I always try to make it a point to post a picture or two of whoever that I'm talking with so you have an idea of them, and if there is a video that I can post, I post that as well. So that way, like this week where we have Curtis Cam, he has several YouTube videos, but I had selected one which I had put on the website, and you can watch that video there on the website as well. So again, there's a lot of additional content, including the prizes that we offer as part of the contests from time to time. A lot of times I will be able to solicit a gift from one of the speakers, who are rather the guests that we have here on the Magic Word, and they are kind enough to offer something to the listeners, and so we offer that then in the contest. And then from time to time, whenever that we have these kinds of things available, you can only access this and enter the contest by actually going to the website and filling out the registration and winning some prizes. There have been some really cool things in the past, and I know there are going to be some more cool things coming up in the future as well. So you just need to take a look at the content that's on the website. Well, I think you've heard enough from me over here, and so I hope you've enjoyed also what Curtis had to say earlier today. And again, if you have an opportunity to ever meet him, to be sure and thank him for being a guest on The Magic Word and tell him that you heard it here. And we appreciate you spreading the word. So again, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. So for The Magic Word Podcast, stay well, get booked, and make the ordinary extraordinary. This is Scotty out.